Nathan Moore is an actor, director, producer, just all-around multifaceted storyteller. He was born in New Hampshire, but because his father was in the military, his family moved around frequently. He spent much of his childhood visiting the home of his grandparents in Wisconsin, where he really cultivated his imagination and knack for creating stories. Eventually, his family settled in Florida, where Nathan really began to take an interest in theater, and by high school, he also developed a love for film. It was then that he knew that he wanted to pursue a career in the entertainment industry, but there were a lot of reasons keeping him from moving to Los Angeles. Instead, he stayed put and studied musical theater in college. But it wasn't long before his desire to work in film became too strong to ignore, and he pulled up stakes and headed west. It was in LA that Nathan really discovered the key to finding fulfillment as a collaborative storyteller. Community. I'm Bobby Gonzalez, and this is Spoken Dreams.
Hi, my name is Nathan Moore. I am a actor, producer, director, slash, whatever else needs to be done at any given time. I was born in New Hampshire. My father was in the Air Force, so we weren't long anywhere. We were usually about every 2 years we would move. Very traditional family, church, older sister. Very supportive parents and extended family as well. And there was no real pressure to do one thing or another. They just wanted us to, you know, explore and be happy and be kids. Every summer they would take us up to Wisconsin, which is where my mom's side of the family is from. And we would stay with my grandparents for 2 months while my parents went off and had their adult summer camp type stuff. But that enabled us to, you know, use our imagination and walk through the woods and pick blackberries and, you know, chase my cousins around. And it was just like an ideal kind of Americana childhood for the better part of growing up. I'm extremely fortunate in that regard. And it was when my father retired that we moved to Florida, which is where his side of the family is from, and where the first time we ever got to even like really put roots down, and we were there for, you know, more than just a couple of years. So I went to middle school there, went to high school there, and while I was in middle school, my sister had started to get involved in like the drama club at her school, and there was like a summer program called Youth of the Beaches Arts Guild. And that was my first really big encounter with actually participating in anything stage related outside of the church that we grew up in and doing those little types of skits. But it was also the same year that I saw my first musical, and that was Les Mis. And when it was described to me by my father, it was like, he was like, it's kind of like an opera. There's no real script or anything. And I was like, wait, you're taking me to see an opera? What? No. And I threw a tantrum. Like, I was crying. Like, I was like, I don't want to see an opera. And they were like, just shut up and go. And so we went. And halfway through the show, I was leaning forward in my seat, like, gripping the program. Like, it was the most intense and amazing thing I'd ever seen. First play I ever did was a show called Little Abner, which is not a great show, but it gave me that introduction to a world that I really enjoyed. And, you know, up to that point, playing sports, you know, soccer, football, all that kind of stuff, being from Florida, that was what you did. You played ball if you were a guy. Then once I got involved with drama, I just pretty much quit all that. And my dad was like, are you sure you want to quit and do drama? And I was like, yep. He was like, but you could still play sports. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. So yeah, I just started to do plays as much as I could. And then when I got to high school, I got involved in like the TV production class, because that was the only place I saw a avenue of which I could, you know, pick up a camera and do something on the storytelling end. Like, my buddies and I could go around and shoot whatever we wanted. We could go make stories without anybody else telling us that we weren't allowed or what stories we were allowed to tell. So that's when, for me, that's when I fell in love with, like, film and creating and storytelling and screenwriting and all that kind of stuff. I can remember sitting in the theater, my dad taking me to see Jurassic Park, and I was standing on my chair when the velociraptors were chasing the kids, like standing on my chair, and my dad was like, sit down. I was like, I can't. But it was like, that was like, you know, your dreams come to life. I mean, that's the stuff, like, you run around in the woods, like, making up. There's dinosaurs chasing us. Well, that's all in your imagination. But when you walk into the movie theater and you actually get to see those dinosaurs, you're like, whoa, this, how do I get involved in this? How do I get to make anything that I imagine just appear and make it appear in such a way that it affects those people watching it? And that's where, I mean, that's, and I think that's when I decided, I was like, I want to be in the entertainment industry. There wasn't much of a film industry to speak of in Jacksonville, Florida. But whatever little opportunity there was, like, a movie would come through town and like I'd race to go be an extra in the movie just because I wanted to be around it. But that never seemed like moving to L.A. was like a real option because I didn't know anybody that was in L.A. I didn't know anybody that ever moved to L.A. I didn't know what to do when you would get here. So I kind of continued on the same path as I was on, and I studied musical theater, and I was fortunate enough to be at a place that gave me the opportunity and had the facilities and had the faculty and the other students there that were motivated and excited, and it became infectious to want to continue to create, to want to continue to make things, not only during the school year, but they were, as soon as the spring came around, we'd be auditioning for professional theaters throughout the East Coast to go do summer stock stuff. So it became like a year-round thing that you were just constantly surrounded by people that are creating, constantly surrounded by people that had a passion for what you had a passion for. And I think it was about my junior year that I was like, you know what, I like theater, but I love movies. And so I went and I talked to the head of the musical theater department, and I was like, I'm going to move to LA. And she was like, oh, I thought you were going to go to New York and do the whole theater thing. And I said, yeah, I think that's not for me necessarily right now. I know where I need to be to do what I want to do, even if I don't know what that is yet. And she was like, well, you're throwing your education away. And I was like, what? And she was like, you've trained for this. You should go pursue this. And I said, but that's not where my passion is. And so we had a disagreement. And it was the first time that, like, somebody that was an authority figure for me, who I looked to as a mentor of sorts, was trying to physically steer me in one way or another, rather than letting me make my own choices. And I think to me, like, it was like a breach of trust a little bit, you know, to be somewhere where they're supposed to be encouraging you to do what your passion leads you to do. And instead it was whatever their passion was. Everybody has their own opinion of what you should be doing at any given moment, you know, based off of their history, based off of your history, you know, based off of whatever, you know, the given circumstances are. But it comes down to what you want to do. And if you're not passionate about something, then you're not going to attack it with the same kind of ferocity or the same kind of dedication as you would if it was dictated to you. And so I finished out college, you know, amazing experience altogether. And I was like, all right, I need to move to LA. But again, there's no blueprint for, you know, moving out here, at least from where I was from. So I was like, all right, I need to save money. That's like, everybody tells you save money because it's expensive. So I was like, all right, how do I make the most money the fastest so I can get in my car and drive to LA and not sleep on the streets? So I took a job on a cruise ship, the Disney cruise ship of all cruise ships. As that wound down, everything was just going straight into the bank, and I got off the cruise ship. I went home. I was home long enough to see my sister get ordained as a pastor, and then I packed up my car and drove to LA by myself. And if you ever want to drive across the country by yourself, don't. It's boring. Hours of driving with a full car, and I just had one person in LA that I knew that I was going to crash on her couch when I got here. And that was my whole plan. Get to LA, find the couch. And so I got to LA, I found the couch. And on that first night, because I was pouring garbage into my body throughout the drive out here, you know, fast foods, sodas, whatever was keeping me awake and focused on the drive, my body, like literally my muscles and my neck seized up and froze. And I looked at my one friend in LA and I was like, I can't move. And she was like, ha. And I was like, no, I can't move. I'm in a lot of pain here. And she was like, I have a buddy that went to 2 years of med school. I'll call him. And so she called him over, and he walked in and he was like, what up, dude? I've heard all about you. And I was like, hey. And, they were like, his neck's seized up, and he was like, yeah, you need to drink a lot of water and then probably go see a masseuse in the morning. And I was like, what about tonight? And at that point, he just pulled out a bottle of Jack Daniels, and he was like, drink yourself to sleep. And I was like, is that an official medical diagnosis there? And he was like, well, I'll help you. And I was like, oh, okay. 14 years later, he's like one of my best friends in the world. So once I got out here, it became a matter of... okay, what next? Like, I got here, I moved out here, you know, to be an actor, but there's no roadmap. There's no one tells you what you're supposed to be doing. And it was just kind of that LA story where you're just waiting. You're waiting for your opportunity, but, you know, no one's out there looking for you if they don't know you exist, and they don't know if you exist if you're not out there creating things and if you're not out there being active. So I think I wasted the first 5 years of my time here in LA waiting for somebody else to tell me what to do and waiting for somebody else to help. And it wasn't until I met my now wife that I was like, oh, we can go out and create. We can go out and make stuff on our own. She had started a YouTube channel where she did cover songs, and she's truly the most amazing, talented, kind, generous, beautiful, funny person on the planet. So it wasn't hard to want to be around her and to want to like collaborate with her. And so I was like, you have an audience of, at the time, just under 20,000 people that anytime you post something are going to watch it. And no one can tell you what to post. I was like, that's amazing. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, well, we should make stuff. And she was like, I don't know how to shoot or edit or anything like that. And I was like, me neither, but we'll figure it out. And so right about that time, my buddy John, who fixed my neck with a bottle of booze, we figured it out and we started to shoot stuff and we started to make stuff and we started to edit stuff, and we grew her YouTube channel from like 20,000 to like 200,000. And we were, you know, making a little bit of money and able to like kind of support ourselves just doing that. But that was my film school. So we started to shoot and edit and shoot and edit and shoot and edit and write and shoot and edit and write. And we built a group of people around us that were, you know, equally minded and equally as motivated and equally like pursuing the same thing. It instilled in me the confidence and ability to just step out and create without the pressures to have it be perfect or the pressures to have it be for everyone. So that YouTube world and that experience working in that place, in addition to the many creators that were on there, you know, you meet directors of photography, you meet editors, you meet composers, you start to expand into these other realms of things. And because she had met this musician on YouTube, they did a live singing gig at this little place called the Rockwell. And because she performed there and they packed the house and it was awesome, the executive producer, artistic executive producer over at the Rockwell, Kate Pizzakis, she reached out and was like, hey, we're doing an unauthorized musical parody of a show. Come do this. And Lana was like, I don't even know what this is. I was like, yeah, but it's an opportunity. Like, go figure it out. And so she did. So the shows that happen at Rockwell, the unauthorized musical parody series that they do there, they take movies that people hold dear and they parody them. And they put in music that either is of the time that that movie came out or is appropriate for the storylines to help push it along. And they're hilarious. And it introduced us to this really wonderful, like, eclectic world of theater that is LA, and really kind of reintroduced me to the art form that got me involved in everything in the first place, in a sense that it was a group of people there that were passionate about performing and making people laugh and not doing it because they were, you know, getting paid exorbitant amounts of money or being seen by thousands of people at any given moment. Like a capacity house at Rockwell is 150 people, but it's in those intimate settings that you can actually feel that energy come off the audience. You can feel them like with you when the show is going on. And from an audience member watching those first couple shows at Rockwell that I got a chance to see, I was like, man, these people are really talented. And it's people from Broadway, it's people that are series regulars on network shows that just want to do something that's fun and in a space that allows them to be creative and kind of unrestrained. And so flash forward 6 months later, one of the actors dropped out and they were like, Nathan, do you want to come on? It's literally our closing night of the unauthorized musical parody of The Big Lebowski, and we want you to go on. And I was like, okay. So I had one rehearsal, I went on, it was a blast. And then from then on, I had been in a number of shows, from Hocus Pocus to Bridesmaids. And then this winter, Kate reached out and was like, hey, we're doing the unauthorized musical parody of Jurassic Park. Our director that I had been speaking to about it is not able to do it. Can you do it? And I said, yeah, of course. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. Why wouldn't I do it? Once we had it up on its feet, we were able to see it. And I was like, oh, man, this is fun. This is good. And it was just kind of like another step in the progression of me going, okay, this is what I want to be doing. I should be creating, whether it's on stage, whether it's on film, whether it's on, you know, television. Like, I just need to be creating. And so that's why now I'm a collaborative storyteller. Like, I love working with really talented people that have a passion for storytelling, and I love being able to get together with them and be like, all right, how do we figure this out? How do we make this happen? How do we execute it like this? How do we go out there and do that? So more and more that's become my motivating factor, is find people I enjoy being around, find people I enjoy collaborating with, and then make those projects happen in whatever capacity they appear. For me, my happiness is now is just finding those opportunities to go make those projects. You know, it's just about continuing to create and about continuing to find stuff that inspires you.
That was Nathan Moore. There's still time to catch the final weekend of the unauthorized musical parody of Jurassic Park at the Rockwell Table and Stage in Los Feliz. If you can't swing it, you can check out the next show, the unauthorized musical parody of Clueless, premiering in May. We'll have links to all that and more on Nathan on our website, ktla.com/spokendreams. And hey, have you added us on social media yet? Be sure to do that. I'm Spoken Dreams Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and you can follow the Spoken Dreams Facebook page. Thanks to those of you who have subscribed to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever. New episodes drop every Monday, and subscribers always get them first. Thanks for listening to this episode of Spoken Dreams. Until next time, break a leg. Spoken Dreams is produced by me, Bobby Gonzalez, for the KTLA 5 News in Los Angeles. Executive producers are Olson Ebright and Jason Ball. And I'd love to hear from you. Tell me what you thought of this week's story, or even tell me your own story. You can shoot me an email at spokendreams@ktla.com.